My mama call and interrupt my nap every game day. I picked up the phone today and said, Ma, we're not starting that again this year. You know it's nap time.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily fantasy basketball podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com and at Yahoo Sports Australia. And you can find me on Twitter as always at @RedRock_Beeble and on Instagram at Locked On Fantasy Basketball. In today's show, we're going to be looking at the NBA awards. Myself and Kyle McEwen giving our prediction. Kyle McEwen, that's his name. Giving our predictions for the top three in each of the major NBA awards. We're going to be talking a little bit about some things we've noticed in preseason from a fantasy basketball perspective as well. Michael Bolton.
Let's get to it, indeed.
And here he is, of course, the man from Basketball Monster to talk about these NBA awards with me. It is Kyle McEwen.
I love you guys, except for you, Kyle.
Kyle, welcome back.
Thanks, Josh. I love you too.
Yeah, of course you do. Let's talk about these NBA awards and get into our predictions for them. And we're going to talk a little bit of fantasy from the preseason as well at the end of this show. Kyle, we will start with the MVP. I will let you have the honors to kick things off. Who is your pick for the MVP for this season and your top three guys?
I think this is kind of a wide open race, and like we've seen with a lot of the MVP awards, it's usually going to come down to which team has the best record or the one of the top records, and yet is still kind of beating people's expectations. For the most part, I expect Giannis Antetokounmpo to take a back-to-back MVP award, but I also think that Joel Embiid will be fast in that running, likely get in second place, and then James Harden will still be in the running there and pulling in third probably.
Yeah, look, it's hard to argue with any of that. I'm taking Harden as the MVP here. I think that the Rockets are going to push for the best record in the West, and while the Bucks, I think, will have the best record in the East, I think having that moniker in the West is probably a little bit more impactful. And if he can coexist and maintain his production alongside Russell Westbrook, which so many people are doubting, that will push him to number one. I've got Yanni coming in at number two there, no surprise. That's the top two guys from last season. And then I've got Steph Curry coming in at number three. I like your Embiid pick at number two. I think he's going to have a big year. Did you consider Curry into this top three?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, I'd say four and five, I'd say Karl-Anthony Towns and Curry should probably be in the conversation. But Karl-Anthony Towns will be one of those situations where he'll put up a great statistical season like we've seen other guys do in the past, whether it's Harden or Westbrook, but they may not actually win the award that year. And it's with Karl-Anthony Towns, it'll be because his team just won't win enough games for him to deserve the recognition.
Yeah, I think he's going to have a huge year. That the Timberwolves are playing at an excessively high pace at the moment. We've heard so much about the ball running through Towns offensively. We're seeing that in preseason as well. He's going to put up some big numbers. I believe, if I remember correctly, I had them at the over in the over-under win total show I did with Greg. I think they're going to be better than some people expect, but Towns is going to be driving nearly all of that. And his numbers are going to be pretty huge, but it is going to be hard to win an MVP or even get top three on a team that doesn't make the playoffs, which is where I expect the Timberwolves to be. Kyle, let's move on to the Rookie of the Year award now. Zion Williamson, I've got at number one. I've got Ja Morant at number two, and we don't differ there. I have RJ Barrett coming in at number three. Now, that is pretty boring to take draft pick one, two, and three. I know, and I tried hard not to do it. I thought, I'll throw someone else in there. But look, Zion has been unbelievable. Look, if Zion's an all-star this season, I wouldn't be surprised. I don't think it'll happen, but I wouldn't be surprised. Morant has looked great. I just think that given the amount of minutes that the Knicks have given Barrett so far, it's been huge. Like, he had 39 minutes in the first preseason game. He's going to just be force-fed a lot of playing time, and he's going to put up counting stats, and that's something that Rookie of the Year voters tend to look at. So I wanted to find someone else to put into that zone just so I didn't appear boring as shit by having the top three draft picks in my top three guys there, but I put Barrett at number three. Kyle, you didn't put Barrett at number three. You went completely off the board and went with the fourth overall draft pick at number three in your Rookie of the Year voting. So why DeAndre Hunter?
I mean, one reason why I put DeAndre Hunter in there is partly because, like you're talking about, I didn't want to put RJ Barrett there. I do think that look, a lot of these awards are going to come down to narratives and how those kind of shape out throughout the season. RJ Barrett today, I probably should have put him as the third likeliest player to get Rookie of the Year honors simply because, like you said, in the preseason, he's been getting a ton of minutes. They're letting him run with the ball and just try to score, and that might lead to a lot of, you know, or like a Tyreek Evans type rookie year where he has a lot of stats, but it doesn't necessarily mean wins for the team, and it doesn't necessarily mean a great career for him going forward. I do think that we should be a little bit suspicious of the fact that playing RJ Barrett as many minutes as he did for the Knicks, it doesn't make sense. So it just further establishes the fact that David Fizdale's rotation decisions and just how he divvies out the minutes from night to night is really up for debate, or it's just unpredictable. Yeah. So for RJ Barrett, I think the fact that he played huge minutes in the preseason, it almost screams at me like red flag, don't trust it. Who knows if he starts on opening night, because that's how crazy Fizdale is in regards to his decision-making processes. So when I looked at DeAndre Hunter, I said, I'm going to take him third overall, mainly because I think the narratives might flow to DeAndre. If the Hawks are competing at the end of the season for a playoff spot with Trae Young, John Collins, and then DeAndre Hunter being, you know, in the mix as like their third best player, in some regard, you can definitely talk about Kevin Herter. You can talk about, Cam Reddish or Jabari Parker. That was a joke. So I just kind of looked at the narrative thing of saying the end of the season, which rookie might be in a position where they would get talked into having all the beat writers and the people who are voting for the awards, what would maybe drive their choices. And I thought DeAndre Hunter playing on a potential Atlanta Hawks playoff team, which I don't think they're going to make the playoffs, but if that narrative develops, that's why I could see DeAndre Hunter getting there.
I reckon there is, and this is a number that I've definitely plucked out of my ass, I reckon there's a 30% chance that Cam Reddish has a better season than DeAndre Hunter this season. As of the time of us recording this, they are going to start next to each other in the Hawks preseason game today. Reddish is going to start for Herter, who's still dealing with that knee issue. By having 30%, I'm saying it's not likely, but I think there is still a chance that does occur. I'm just not as enamored with Hunter. I don't think he's going to put up interesting counting stats. I could see it, but I think there are other guys who I would have ahead of him. That's where we differ there in our Rookie of the Year voting, or our alleged voting that we don't actually have, waiting for the NBA to give me that call. Defensive Player of the Year, Kyle, your list here does differ from the award winner from last season, so I'll let you kick it off.
I put Miles Turner at the number one spot, and it's because I think that with him being the lone center on that Pacers team, that's not to say Domantas Sabonis isn't going to play minutes there. He will. But Miles Turner is the center on this Pacers team now. He's been putting up like 5 blocks a game essentially during the preseason, and I just look at it and I go, if he's going to continue that kind of production throughout the season, and this Pacers team – They don't have Victor Oladipo for the whole season, so that narrative is going to have to fall to somebody on this team if that Pacers team does well as far as giving them an all-star or at least a defensive player of the year candidate. And when I look at the stats that are getting put up right now, I think the easiest guy to think that might come from is Miles Turner at that center spot with the amount of blocks that he's been getting lately.
Yeah, look, his block numbers have been crazy. And he's not just like a Hassan Whiteside sort of a guy. Now, Whiteside got a ton of blocks but had a lot of defensive issues at times. Robert Williams, one of those guys last season as well as a rookie. But Turner actually played really strong defense as well as getting a lot of blocks. So I think that's totally fine to have him there. You've got Yanni Antetokounmpo at number 2 and Rudy Gobert at number 3. They were two guys who were right at the top last season. Of course, Gobert winning the award. I've got Gobert going again for 3 years in a row. It's just hard to see where he drops off at all, given how good he's been, how good this Jazz team predicts to be. And also, I think it will be interesting if the Jazz can maintain a level of or that same level of defensive competence without Derek Favors. So that means more of that is falling onto Gobert. So he's carrying Bojan Bogdanović, he's carrying Joe Ingles and Royce O'Neal instead of having Favors next to him. Then more credit goes to Gobert. But that's, of course, going to be dependent on whether the fact that the Jazz can actually maintain that level of defense. I've got Josh Richardson coming in at number 2 as a perimeter guy. In general, they don't tend to win. Kawhi Leonard has won it in the past, but perimeter guys don't get that respect. But I think that on this Sixers team, Kyle, which could be an historically good defensive team, like a historically great defensive team. Richardson's going to be that number one guy on the perimeter, shutting down people, who doesn't have to expend as much energy offensively as he did last season. I think that the narrative there, if the Sixers come out with a number one defense and Richardson is just a terror, averaging, you know, two plus steals a game and a block a game, he's in that mix there. And then Anthony Davis, I've got at number three, who is going to have obviously a ton of spotlight on him. And if he's going to come in and do what he does, he was excellent defensively, of course, for the Pelicans. But now that additional spotlight, we talked about narrative early, I have Davis coming in there at number three. But yeah, no issue with Yanni or Miles Turner being in that mix.
I would love to see Anthony Davis claim the Defensive Player of the Year award. I just think that him playing at power forward is going to be harder for him to do that.
If he was at
center all season, he'd probably end up doing some crazy stuff in regards to his statistical contributions. Josh Richardson is a really interesting pick. The funny thing about that Sixers team is four of their five starters could win Defensive Player of the Year, theoretically, depending on who you wanted to build the narrative around if they are the number one defense. So that's really super interesting. It's probably something we don't talk about enough. And then they got Matisse Thybulle coming off the bench. So
their defense is going to be ridiculous. It's so good.
Just thinking about it.
It's
your Gobert pick, though. Yeah. I almost I'm sorry to cut you off, brother. I love you. Your Gobert pick, I really thought hard about putting Gobert first again because of the fact that they got Mike Conley out there at the point of attack on defense as well. As much as you might think that there's a drop-off with Derek Favors not being there potentially, I think that they might be helped by the fact that they have better, quote, you know, perimeter capable defenders theoretically in Bojan Bogdanović and Jeff Green out there. Granted, Jay Crowder played a lot out there last year, but opinions on him differ.
Yeah, my opinion is not that he is that good.
I don't think he's great, but you know, as far as like debating whether or not Jay Crowder or Derek Favors is a better perimeter defender, then we can maybe get into debate.
Yeah, that's
but you still got Ed Davis there to hold down the center position when Gobert goes out. And yeah, I mean, I just look at this team and they just might be so impressive defensively for this era that you might just have to give Gobert or even maybe Mike Conley the Defensive Player of the Year award.
That's interesting. Conley, an interesting name that I didn't expect. And the other names I could have in that mix, of course, Miles Turner, you could have Yanni. Paul George, I think, is just going to miss too much time. Leonard took a step back in his defense last season. Robert Covington, if he can stay healthy, he's been in that mix before. I could expect him to get closer to that number or get into that conversation if he has a great year. The sixth man of the year, Kyle, our awards differ quite a bit here. In fact, in our top three, we don't have any crossover. I went with Bogdan Bogdanović as my winner for sixth man of the year. He was super impressive in the FIBA World Cup. He's going to be coming off the bench behind Buddy Hield and Harrison Barnes and should be getting high 20s in minutes. He wasn't healthy to begin last season, had a knee injury. He's fine now, so Bogdan is my number one pick. I went with Lou Williams again, even though his usage and his minutes might be a little bit reduced. He may not close as many games. He's still going to be Lou Williams. He's still going to score. He's going to start some games, apparently, according to Doc Rivers this season as well. But I've got him there. And then I put Joe Ingles there. Now, I don't know if Joe Ingles is actually going to come off the bench or not. The Jazz last game did start with him on the bench and Royce O'Neal starting, something which I mentioned a couple of months ago as a possibility for this team. And if he is running that second unit, dishing out, you know, five or six assists, knocking down threes, and just running that second unit, and again, on a Jazz team which projects to be the top half of the Western Conference, I have Ingles coming in there at number three for sixth man of the year. But, Cole, you've got three different blokes here. So who are your guys?
I think Marcus Smart looks like he's kind of stuck into a bench position behind Kemba Walker and Jalen Brown and that whole wing corp that the Celtics have. Fred VanVleet, I think he's going to come off the bench most games, yeah. And that's the only that's the rule. You know, you to get sixth man of the year award, you just have to come off the bench more games than you did start. So I think Fred VanVleet might be in contention there because he might get a ton of minutes as someone who doesn't start maybe every game or most games. Derek White, if the Spurs legitimately are going to bring him off the bench this season, which just seems stupid to me. And then, you know, other guys to consider, totally, like you said, Bogdan Bogdanović on that Kings team after his great play at FIBA and coming in and like he said, he expects 28 to 29 minutes off the bench, so he should get plenty of run to be in contention. And then Spencer Dinwiddie potentially too on that Nets team is someone to consider for those roles. But you know, Lou Williams is always going to be in contention as long as, I mean, hope he's not. And I do see pathways that he may not be able to get the production that we've seen in the past, especially the last like year or two when he's had kind of an inflated role in some respects, because they do have Landry Shamet. Yeah, he's going to start some games as well, you know, and he's also been handling the ball as far as getting assists and off the bench or as in the starting lineup. So there's an additional ball handler there, along with the fact that Bly and Paul George are going to have the ball in their hands so much more too. So I just think it might be really hard for Lou Williams to do it, but I've thought that before, and he's came out and been even better. So hard to discount him.
It's definitely a possibility. I was also considering just throwing Jamal Crawford in there, even though he's not signed to an NBA team, just for the sake of having Jamal Crawford, perennial sixth man of the year candidate, who apparently, Kyle, I'm not sure if you heard, he did drop 50 in a game last year. Every time that I say how much I love Jamal Crawford, but he shouldn't be on an NBA team, man, he dropped 50 last year. That's cool.
Why do people get so like... I mean, I get it. I guess I would feel the same way if Stanley Johnson wasn't in the league right now, but... it's so funny to me when I get on Twitter and I see people standing for, you know, I guess Derrick Rose is still in the league too, but you know, Carmelo or Jamal or any of these guys who are just bucket getters, and it's like, oh, why isn't he on a team? And it's like, really? Do you need this explained?
Perfect six man for a contender. Like, no. If he was a six man on a team, then they would not be a contender. And I love Jamal Crawford. He's unbelievable. Just one of the best blokes that I've ever heard any story. Never heard a negative story about Crawford ever. But at this point, he wasn't even a sixth man for the Suns, and they were the worst team in the NBA last season. But enough about good old Jamal Crawford. I saw your list here for the sixth man of the year, and I was pissed that I didn't include any of them, because I looked at him and go, yeah, Marcus Smart, that makes sense. Or Fred VanVleet, that, yeah, excellent pick. And even Maximum Derek. But can we talk about Derek White here in the Spurs for a second? Because we all thought he was in for a pretty big year. They have not used him and DeJounte Murray together at all. They're playing him exclusively off the bench, like they're playing like 24 minutes apiece, which really hampers the impact of both of those guys. The one, you know, saving grace for me thinking that Derek White's going to have a strong season is that the Spurs have been absolutely disgustingly bad in preseason, and this rotation doesn't appear to be working. Now, Kyle, my advice to people who drafted Derek White, which is myself in tons of leagues, is you don't drop him. Of course you don't drop him. Let's see exactly what happens when the regular season continues or begins. But it hasn't been great. How do you think they're going to use him? Like, what is actually going on here with the way they're running this rotation? Because they are getting pantsed every time they're out in the court, pretty much.
The first two preseason games, I thought, all right, Coach Popovich is just looking at Bryn Forbes and saying,
yep,
I'm going to give you the first couple starts in the preseason because you're the starter from last year. It was your job. It's your job to lose. Mark White and DeJounte Murray, you've got like two guys who could be starting in your backcourt who could both be on a first team all defense. So just start them. They're the perfect guys to start next to a ball dominant player like
DeMar DeRozan.
Yeah. So it just makes, and then you need great wing defenders. Cool. Those guys both have good wingspans. They both hustle.
They're tall. They're like 6'5", 6'6".
DeJounte Murray's offensive game continues to grow, and we're supposed to believe that Derek White's working on his 3-point shot and improving that. That was one thing Derek White said he knew he needed to improve, was his off ball work in regards to his 3-point shot and his catch and shoot threes because of the role that he would have to play this year. So it's just weird. Maybe, and then one more argument for Derek White is the idea that him and Pop spent the whole summer together.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons.
Bring
him
off the bench to rest him.
Yeah, like that's why I thought, you know, his work with Popovich is a lot of faith, yeah, put in there. But then straight away, Murray off the ASL, back starting, and White in a backup role, even though he was, you know, one of their best players last season and was, you know, huge in the playoffs. So, look, it could end up that it's a huge miss in terms of looking at Derek White putting up a big season, but every indication was that he'd be able to put up, you know, strong numbers even in 28, 29 minutes. But it doesn't even look like at that point, this point, he's getting there. But I'm not panicking, I'm holding. Making a rash move at this point in the preseason is not ideal. But let's move on to our next award, Kyle. It is the most improved player, a tough award to get to. I eliminated all second year players out of my listing of guys here. You haven't, but give me your list of guys.
Lonzo Ball at one. A lot of the times, I think it's easy for a narrative to get caught up on a most improved player for, yep, a player who's just simply coming back from injury in some respects. Plus, this is it. We're on the right track for Lonzo to have a big improvement this season, because the starting point guard job is theoretically, you know, unopposed in many regard, and it's a new team. It's they're going to be running at a fast pace. All these things are lining up for Lonzo. Bam Adebayo, second on my list with the Heat, with him stepping into that starting center job. And then I've got Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, so that's a second rounder. But he's stepping into a new team that's his, essentially, in many regard, or at least as far as going forward for the future. So, and then other guys to consider, I had John Isaac, Tom Bryant, and then maybe Markelle Fultz. If he actually is good all season.
Yeah, look, I like the Bam one there. I like Shea, obviously. I like the Thomas Bryant one. They weren't in my list. My list was Caris LeVert at number one. I think I had him at number two last year. Then, of course, he broke his ankle, so that was wrecked. But I like what we've seen from him. He's been so assertive in the preseason. Of course, that's without Kyrie, so how he fits in there remains to be seen. But he was their best player in the playoffs, and I expect him to continue. Yeah, his improvement throughout this season. I had Lonzo at number two, so we did cross over there. And I had Johnny Isaac at number three, who's been really, really good in the preseason. The defense is there and the offense is coming around. His playmaking as well. Yeah, he's really taking a step forward. So they are my top three for most improved player there. What did you, you didn't mention LeVert. Did you, do you think it's just going to be hard for him to take that necessary step forward with Irving around?
Pretty much. I just don't know how... looking back on the last couple of seasons, like if LeVert steps into more minutes than the 30 that we've typically seen people playing on the Nets, because it's a new time for the Nets with superstars actually being on the team now. If we see Kyrie, if we see LeVert step up and play more than that 30 minutes per game, I do think that there's the possibility of LeVert to step up and continue to play well. But I am worried about how he's going to fit next to Kyrie Irving, because we saw last year as well just how much usage D'Angelo Russell as the point on offense ate up. And I'm worried that LeVert's going to get stuck in kind of a second fiddle role that's going to be, I don't know. There's a lot to like about LeVert. He's a fun player to watch, but he's been terrifically inconsistent. And I think a lot of that does have to do with his injuries. So if he's healthy and everything comes together, there's a great potential for a most improved season. Absolutely.
Let's move on to the coach of the year now. Kyle, give us your three guys here.
Brett Brown from the Sixers, expecting that's if they win the Eastern Conference, essentially, or right there neck and neck with the Bucks. Nick Nurse, if the Raptors are fighting for the second or first spot overall in the East, maybe Nick Nurse gets given like a I guess a post hype coach award for his work last season almost. And then Elvin Gentry, I just think that there's going to be so many huge narratives around this Pelicans team.
Everyone's going to be watching them as well.
Yeah, the excitement around Zion, and then when you see the passes that Lonzo's throwing to him, and then Elvin Gentry smiling after games when they win because Zion's awesome. It's I see a lot of narratives building up there.
This is not to say anything about any of the other coaches, but whenever I talk to people in the media, you know, one of the first names that comes up when they're talking about, you know, you talk to guys and you say, you know, what's good in this city, or you know, what's a good story you've got? Elvin Gentry's name always comes up. Like, he has a great relationship with the media. The media guys absolutely love Elvin Gentry, and media guys vote for these awards a lot of the time. So media vote for the coach. Not the other coaches aren't voting, are they? Because executive of the year is voted by executives. Coach of the year is done by media, I'm pretty sure. I could be wrong on that, but the media love Elvin Gentry. They've never heard a bad word from people, not only just people covering the team, but opposing beat writers talking about him. He's the name that always comes up when I talk about that. Now, on my side, I've went with Mike D'Antoni. This ties in with my Harden MVP. If he can get the Harden-Westbrook combination to click for them to finish in the one seed, which is what's going to require for Harden to win that MVP, I think I'm going to give Mike D'Antoni the coach of the year. I went with Steve Kerr there. The narrative, again, narrative's important. No KD, Klay Thompson out, Steph and Dre having to step their games back up, the bench and that starting small forward position, which is absolute crap at the moment. There is so much for him to work with. But if he can push them into a top four seed, then he gets the nod, really showing, hey, this guy can actually coach without a million all-stars. And then I went with Brett Brown as well for those same reasons that you mentioned. Kyle, our NBA... go ahead.
Hey, who do you think the Warriors should start at small forward? Like, who would be your preferred starter at small forward?
Okay.
I don't even care if it's the best one for them.
Okay, Originally, I thought it was going to be Alphonso McKinney, but I'm at the impression he's going to be gone. They're not going to keep him. They're going to keep Marquese Chris over him. I think they're going to go with Glenn Robinson, but I want him to put Jordan Poole out there. Just throw him out there. Just throw the young guy out there. I don't think he's good enough to do it, but Glenn Robinson definitely isn't. And I know that Poole could be good enough, but Glenn Robinson definitely isn't. Alec Burks, I think, is much better suited in a bench role and will get lost next to Curry and Russell. I want Poole out there just spotting up and banging in threes.
I completely agree about Alec Burks. I think it's possible he steals the starting small forward job just because of the other players are absolutely terrible. But I think Eric Paschal would be an interesting option there.
I think he's a bit slow on the perimeter. He's more of a four to me, who will just fill in behind Draymond Green, and he's going to get quite a few minutes. And I think they would be better off using him as a center rather than a small forward. But I really like him, and I do think he's going to be in the rotation. But having Glenn Robinson as your best option is not an ideal scenario, so anything really could go in that area.
And I watched Glenn Robinson on the Pistons, and he was absolutely horrible. Because when you have one of these roles where you are a role player and it's your job to shoot when you're supposed to shoot and all these kind of stuff, like, and then you've got a guy like Glenn Robinson or Jonas Terebko, a lot of players over the years who just – they don't take their shot when they're supposed to, or they pump fake when they're not supposed to, and it just ruins the offense. Glenn Robinson's one of those guys, man. He does not know when to pick his spot. And part of that is because he's not aggressive enough. So maybe the Warriors did a good job of making Jonas Terebko a little bit less frustrating of a player to watch, but maybe they can do that with Glenn Robinson. We'll see. But, I mean, it's like you said at the start of that whole talk about Kerr and the Warriors situation. It's just they've got close to nothing legitimate small forward for this season.
It's the worst position. Warriors small forward. Wizards small forward is close, but Troy Brown is better than Glenn Robinson. But the Warriors small forward position is the worst position in the entire NBA. NBA champion, Kyle, I am going with the LA Clippers. I think that they have, just having that star power of Kawhi and Paul George, Lou Williams, Montrezl Harrell, an ascension from Landry Shamet, Patrick Beverley as a defensive guy, Doc Rivers as a coach. I really like what they have built in this offseason, so that is the team I am going for. You are sticking close to home, though, Kyle.
I just think it's the Bucks, man. They almost made it to the finals last year. They were up two games on the Raptors and nearly won that third game, and then it just fell apart. So I think that another year of Giannis's development, losing Malcolm Brogdon isn't nearly the worry that a lot of people want to talk about, especially if George Hill plays the way he played last year, then Malcolm Brogdon doesn't matter.
Yeah, look, George Hill was shit for the whole year until the end of the season where he was really good. So it depends which one you're going to get. But yeah, that is a big swing point for this Bucks team. Let's look at our All-NBA first team. We didn't go through all of the three teams. I went with fairly similar teams here. Giannis Antetokounmpo and Anthony Davis as the forwards. Jimmy Harden and Steph Curry as the guards. And Nikola Jokic as my center. Your guards and forwards are the same, Kyle, but you went with a different center. Of course, that is your second in MVP voting decision in Joel Embiid over Jokic. I can't argue with that at all, really. These are the two guys who would be in that discussion. For the first All-NBA, Tim, do you have anything to add on this? Or it seemed pretty straightforward for at least those four positions.
Oh, it's just when I read through your team, I was like, oh, crap, Jokic, that's another guy that you can obviously consider in the MVP discussion. This whole season's going to be awesome because of how wide open everything is. So, yeah, I mean, we can take a generalized perspective of who's going to be competing for stuff. But, like, as far as who's actually going to come out with the best records, who's going to win the league, all this kind of crap, like, it's going to come down to, we're not in the super team era necessarily anymore. We're back to, like, a limit of two superstars on teams right now. Maybe, we could see a team that doesn't even seem like a championship contender right now who adds a player a la the way the 2004 Pistons added Rasheed Wallace in the middle of the year, and then they become a contender. So it's just something, it's just going to be a fun season because of the parity that's there right now.
Of course, we are out of that, super, super big three type era, apart from the Raptors with Kyle Lowry, Pascal Siakam, and Stanley Johnson. Kyle, you can't forget that superb troika.
Stanley looked so bad this preseason. The exact same. He didn't change anything in his game. And it's just, I mean, pretty much since he's been a rookie. So it's really sad.
Let's go on to our last award prediction. It is the all-rookie first team. Positions aren't important. It's just the five best rookies when you're looking at all-rookie team. I went with Zion Williamson and Ja Morant, as did you. I had RJ Barrett in there. That's my top three for Rookie of the Year. I added PJ Washington and Rui Hachimura. Not that I think that those two guys are going to be in the best five players from this class long term. It's about the opportunity they get, the numbers they put up, and how impressive they look in this first season. And I think that's why, well, not I think, that is why I've got Washington and Rui there. You know, I have other players like Culver or Brandon Clark or Kobe White, who I think will be better than those guys long term. But in terms of opportunity from the beginning of the year, amassing those counting numbers, that's why I have Rui, PJ, RJ, Ja, and Zion as my top five. Kyle, what's yours?
It's the exact same, except I do not have RJ Barrett. I've got DeAndre Hunter.
Yep.
So, and it's the exact same stuff that you're talking about. I was looking through all the rookies and saying to myself, okay, we know that Zion's going to get a lot of publicity. Ja Morant's going to get a lot of publicity because he's exciting. He can go to the rack and dunk the ball with ferocity, even though he's this lanky guy. He dishes out tons of assists, so which is just, it's fun to watch. It, you know, team ball is exciting. Rui Hachimura, he's getting so much publicity because he's playing pretty well in the preseason, and he's got that spark with the whole being from Japan thing. Like, he's getting just tons of coverage as in regards to that, because the Wizards want to pump up that what's that called?
International Q score.
Yeah, exactly. Q scores, baby. PJ Washington, the Hornets are looking like they're going to feed him a bunch of minutes. If they're not going to start Marvin Williams this season, there's really no reason for...
No, Marvin's not starting. There's no way they're starting him.
No, not at all. But I'm just saying, if they're not going to start Marvin Williams, there's no reason to start Nicholas Batum in that starting lineup. Cody Zeller, you can argue, at least he's out there trying to make the other players good. Nicholas Batum's just so aloof about being on that team and maybe even being in the NBA right now. That's I see PJ Washington walking into a starting job here.
Yeah, if he starts opening night, I wouldn't be surprised at all. And he was way off my radar 2 months ago. But again, it's the Calipari Kentucky situation. He's been super impressive in camp. He's going to, if not start, be the first man off the bench playing either center or power forward. And look, the minutes and the production has been great. It's going to calm down. I think he's shooting 70%+ from two in preseason. That's going to come down. But that opportunity is there for PJ Washington. That is all of our awards, Kyle. Before we let you go, from a fantasy basketball perspective, in the preseason, we always have to be, you know, aware to take things with grains of salt. And Torian Prince isn't going to be a 75% three-point shooter. We know that as we move forward. But what is like one or two things you've noticed in the preseason, good or bad, that you think is going to be important to carry over into the season? We've talked Derek White already, but what do you think else? What's something else that stood out to you?
To keep the conversation on PJ Washington, he's a target for you at the end of drafts now, right, as like a flyer?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. He's a great last-round pickup.
Would you take him over? Like, I'm finding myself, because of his position and the fact that he's a big man, I'm finding myself where I was maybe considering taking Dwayne Bacon, and I have to choose between the two. I'm leaning towards PJ Washington simply because of his more diverse stat profile potentially.
Yeah, look, I can see that as well. Bacon is going to get a lot of shots, but is he going to do anything else? Like, I don't think so. And that would lead me to at least take that flyer on someone like Washington, who I do think it's going to ramp up as the season goes on as well. And again, I didn't see him at all in Summer League because he didn't play. And the Kentucky stuff is always confusing. But, you know, we've got two of the three first-round Kentucky guys, Tyler Hero, Keldon Johnson, PJ Washington, and Washington Hero being those guys that have flashed so much more than what we saw in Kentucky. We're just waiting for Johnson, but he's just not going to play at all this season. So it is an interesting phenomenon that does appear to keep on happening.
I think the one of the more difficult things to figure out in the preseason is what do we buy into, like you were talking about, because like with the Wizards right now, they've got an open competition for small forward and everybody's in competition for it. Admiral Schofield, you know,
Isaac Bonga.
Davis Bertans, supposedly they've talked about potentially playing Rui Hachimura minutes at small forward, although I don't know if that's really going to happen. Troy Brown when he comes back, CJ Miles when he comes back from injury. Yeah. They've said Jordan McRae's in the mix for that position battle. Did I mention Justin Anderson? So
yeah, Justin Anderson may not even make the final roster. Like at this point, he probably isn't. But is he the best three on that roster? Maybe. I really like Justin Anderson, but I don't know if he's going to make the roster.
Well, he's had problems staying healthy over the years too. Yeah, he had an opportunity with the Hawks last season, and he just couldn't stay healthy. So, yeah, it's ultimately that whole situation has led to me. Whereas at the beginning of the preseason or during the summer, once Davis Bertans got traded to the Wizards, I started looking at that situation and going like, all right, they've got to play him big minutes because they don't have any other options. Ironically, or just whatever, I don't know, maybe the right word to describe it, but Scott Brooks has not been playing Davis Bertans at small forward. He certainly hasn't given him a start there during the preseason. And now I'm looking around going like, wow, they might keep Davis Bertans in a limited role, limited-ish role off the bench behind Rui Hachimura and whoever else they decide to start at small forward. So just, I guess, whereas I used to think that Bertans was going to be a good flyer to grab at the end of drafts as someone for three-point production, that still might be the case. He might end up starting on opening night. Don't know. But right now, I'm not taking him at the end of drafts. I'm just kind of either letting him fall to the wire, but that I don't think that's really happening. Somebody's drafting him in most drafts because they're still kind of hoping that a bigger role is going to be there. I just don't know if it is.
A couple of interesting things to me is Derek Favors has been poor for the Pelicans. I'm not worried too much about him. They are playing a lot of Nikola Melli next to Zion Williamson. Favors is dealing with a hamstring issue. He's also a veteran. They don't need to extend him big minutes. He's a guy to watch just to see where that falls. I'm not dropping or anything like that or trading. If you're going to trade away someone like Derek White or Derek Favors, it's the wrong time to do it. Like, you don't do it at this point when everyone's like, oh, shit, we're way out on these guys. Melli and Nikhil Alexander-Walker are looking great for the Pelicans, but just finding enough minutes for them to be standard league relevant players probably isn't there. And I'll throw a weird one at you, Kyle. It's Grayson Allen has put up some really strong numbers. Dylan Brooks is not very good. Grayson Allen's not very good either, but there is opportunity there at shooting guard for the Grizzlies, and he's actually going to be starting their game today alongside their other usual starter. So that's interesting. They moved Brooks out of that starting lineup and put Allen in there. So as a flyer in, say, a 14-team league, Grayson Allen, who did in his rookie summer league put up some interesting numbers, especially in terms of his playmaking numbers, he's someone to at least just keep an eye on, especially if they are going to make this a permanent thing of him starting over Dylan Brooks.
Yeah, Grayson Allen should definitely, Grayson Allen and Dylan Brooks, if they don't get drafted as flyers, which I don't know if I'd be spending a flyer on either of them right now in a standard league, they should be on your watch list to see how it all breaks down. But this is one of those situations where it's kind of like the small forward position for the Grizzlies too. It's like almost too similar of talent. So you're just probably going to see a timeshare that
24, 25 minutes.
Those players. Exactly. So I just don't know if we can get enough. Where do you see Nikhil Alexander-Walker falling into the rotation right now? I see him as like somewhere between the sixth and eighth man, depending on how much they decide to play him off the bench. And then the other two, like three main bench players is JJ Redick and Nikola Melli.
Yeah, so look, their starting lineup, we know it's Lonzo, it's Drew, it's Brandon Ingram, it's Zion, it's Derek Favors, right? So there's your starting five. Melli comes in as that backup big man ahead of Jahlil Okafor, no problem with that. And then you've got Redick, who probably is the next guy. And I think we're looking at Alexander Walker, who's got a sky-high usage, a sky-high true shooting percentage. Things will probably come down. But Redick is also barely playing in the preseason. So at best, Alexander Walker is the fourth guard. And as a fourth guard, like, how are you getting enough minutes to be a standard league impactful guy? Now, Redick could push up and play at the three. Drew Holiday can do that as well. So maybe you say that Alexander Walker, I think he's clearly ahead of Josh Hart in the rotation. I've got no qualms with saying that. He's ahead of Frank Jackson. No worries about that at all, which, again, at the start of the preseason, we didn't know if he'd be able to jump ahead of those guys. I have no problem in thinking that. But is he going? Like, I think he would need 28 minutes a night to be a standard league guy. I can't see that. I just can't see those amount of minutes for a guy who is playing at a sky-high usage and the true shooting is unbelievable. It has to come down. And I just don't see how it can sustain at that level over the course of the season when Drew's getting 35 and Lonzo's getting 33 and Redick's getting 26. Like, finding enough minutes there is pretty tough.
I completely agree. Nikhil Alexander-Walker is more of a watch list guy for the right now for standard leagues, but he's definitely someone to keep an eye on in case his role grows. Because based on the way he's played,
would you rather have
right now in the preseason? We haven't. Drew Holiday is not playing the amount of minutes that he will play.
Yeah, well, I'm gonna bring up their numbers now while you talk.
We're going to have a lot more minutes and a lot more shots going to kind of the core rotation guys, the starters, than what we've seen. And
Oh, here we go. You got
Alexander Walker's just been taking advantage of the preseason situation where he's been allowed to kind of showcase himself. I don't necessarily think he's going to have that opportunity in the regular season.
Drew's played 20 minutes a night. Lonzo's played 23. Ingram's played 22. Alexander Walker's played 18, but he's had a usage of over 30% with a true shooting of 59%, which is obviously quite high. You're hitting 42% of his threes, which is not, I guess he could get to that level, but yeah, Josh Hart's playing those 20 minutes. Etuan Moore and Josh Hart, I just don't think are going to be rotation guys. And then JJ Redick has played just 13 minutes a night. So unless you think that Redick is going to stay at that 13 minutes a night, and Holiday at 20 and Lonzo at 23, which I don't think anybody would think that is realistic, then it just is. We can talk about how good he is and everyone loves a rookie, but just go down, look at it, look at a rotation, try and work out 240 minutes for a team with 10 guys in the rotation, because that's the rotation that these teams will play, and try and see where he fits in. And that's where you see our skepticism, because we have to go in and try and balance that out. And we look at it and go, that's great, look at these numbers. 15 points, 5 assists, a steal a game, almost 3 triples. Unbelievable in 18 minutes. These numbers are huge, and they are huge. But, yeah, 15 points in 18 minutes a night is not a realistic number to continue. 30% usage is not a realistic number to continue. And where is he fitting in that rotation when Drew gets an additional 15, Lonzo gets an additional 10 a game, and JJ Redick probably gets at minimum another 10 per game? Like, where is Alexander Walker sitting in that group?
You're talking about him being in front of Frank Jackson, Josh Hart, and Etuan Moore.
Yep.
So there's going to be dudes waiting to take minutes if he struggles at all.
Yep.
And
then, you know,
this,
including
this
like
Pelican
his
team is almost surely going to be better than people think. So if that's the case too, then, you know, Alvin Gentry's not going to have as much patience with players this season.
It's great to see this, but again, it does feel like it's a classic preseason case, and just finding those minutes is just that's one of the key things we look at is how do you find the minutes, and no matter which way I try to do it, and again, unless this team is playing JJ Redick 15 minutes a night, there just isn't enough for Alexander Walker. And nobody can continue to average 15, 3, and 5 in 18 minutes. Like, it just doesn't happen. Like, that is, they are elite numbers. Like, we're talking about a guy averaging 30 and 10 per 36. Like, I'm sorry, he's not that good. Like, nobody is that good, really. So I just don't see it.
Deeper in Dynasty, for the most part. Deeper in Dynasty.
Yep. That's where we're looking at. Now, Kyle, thank you for coming on and talking about all of these award predictions, projections, and giving our thoughts on the preseason. Let us know where they can find you on Twitter, and have you got anything else cooking up for us?
Find me on Twitter at RotoKyleNBA, and I'll have some more articles going on Basketball Monster this week. We'll talk about that after we get off the show, pal.
Yep, absolutely. All right, guys, don't forget to subscribe to this podcast, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and on YouTube. Give it a thumbs up. Leave a comment down below. Follow me on Twitter at @RedRock_Beeble and on Instagram at @LockedOnFantasyBasketball. Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Graham.